one is this who controls the wind and the waves. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we can see through that, through the greatness of God controlling the wind and the waves, that that same God wants to get to know you and wants to get to know me on a personal level. And he loves us. And he died for us. That's the kind of God that we serve. So before we start the message, I'm not going to forget this time. Children, you can be dismissed to Children's Church, and that also includes 5th and 6th grades as they are preparing for their Christmas program. So I trust they will have a wonderful time over there. And if you would, again, turn to Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, again, that is page 1361 in the Pew Bibles. And we're going to be looking at that that section of verses that we read for our scripture reading this morning, verses 22 to 33. But as we begin, I need to confess something. I probably need glasses. I've been putting it off for a long time because I don't think that I would like glasses. As a kid, you kind of look at the people with glasses. No offense, people with glasses, and you're like, I don't really, right? I mean, come on. It's not the cool thing to have when you're a kid, right? To have glasses, and if you're a kid and you have glasses, I'm sorry. I'm just saying that's, as a kid, that's what I thought, right? And so now, as an adult, and I'm needing glasses, and I'm really trying to put it off, And so we're driving down the road, and my wife's like, can you read that sign? And I say, yeah, just hold on for a second while we get a little closer. And then I can read it, and it's all great. The problem is that when we're on the highway, and it's like an exit sign, and I need to know where to go, I can't really see it until I'm, like, right on the exit, and it's like do or die, And so usually that means that if I'm waiting till the last second, I'm going to miss the exit. So there was this one time where, this wasn't actually that long ago, I went for an eye exam just for your regular physical, right? And so I'm going there with a couple of my brothers, and, I don't know if you've ever gone for a regular physical with other people before, but when you do that, they kind of like take somebody in one at a time, right? And so I was kind of in the back while my other brother was doing the eye exam, right? And so being the competitive person that I wasn't necessarily trying to, but they took him out for the eye exam first, and they left the door open, right? And so I heard what he was reading on the eye exam. You got that big chart with the big letters, and they kind of get smaller and smaller. And I don't know who in the world can actually read that last line, but it's actually impossible, I think. I mean, that last line is so small. So anyways, he gets there, and he breezes through the whole thing. I mean, it's just easy, easy, easy stuff, right? And I've got a pretty good memory. And so it's my turn, right? And I get out there, and I can read the first big couple letters, and then I get to, like, like the second or third line. And basically, I can't read it. It's blurry, right? But then I think, oh, yeah, I remember what my brother said. So I just rattled off from memory what he had said without actually focusing at all on these words, right? And I got it, and the nurse is like, wow, you've got great vision. I'm like, yeah, 20/20, it's wonderful. But I wasn't actually reading the letters, right? And obviously, you know this, obviously, that's not going to help me at all when I'm driving. That it's not going to help me if I'm pretending to be able to see smaller letters just because I'm so competitive and I want to be able to see as well as my brother. It's not going to help in real life. I've got to be focusing on the right thing. I've got to be able to have the focus that I need. And that's exactly what's happening here in Matthew chapter 14. Peter, he started out focusing on Jesus. He's focusing on the right thing. His eyes were fixed on Jesus. And as long as he stayed focused on Jesus, he did impossible things. But the moment his eyes drifted away from Jesus and drifted to the waves, everything you could say kind of got blurry. His vision kind of wavered, and he started to sink. So maybe the question this morning is not, do you need glasses? Maybe the question is, where am I looking? because clear vision in life doesn't come from trying harder or seeing better. It comes from keeping your eyes focused on the right thing, focused on Jesus, and not looking down. Let's go ahead and pray, and then we'll jump into this passage. Lord, this is such an important passage of Scripture for each of us, and I pray that as we open it and as we look into it and dive in, I pray that you would help me to be able to explain it clearly. Only say the things that you want me to say, and help us to get some very important truths out of this passage for our life today. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, as we get to this passage in Matthew chapter 14, it's interesting because in the Gospels, and especially here in Matthew, you have one thing happening right after another. I mean, it is an amazing series of events that's going on. And so, if you just look back a couple verses in Matthew chapter 14, there's a very well-known thing that's happening. It's Jesus feeding the 5,000, right? Jesus has done something shocking just before our passage here. And it's not that the people in the who organized the Scriptures have just kind of, Matthew hasn't just kind of condensed everything. This is literally where things are going. I mean, if you look at verse 22, and straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship. So this is right after the feeding of the 5,000. He's taken a small lunch from this seemingly insignificant boy, 5 loaves and 2 fish, and he's turned it into something to feed more than 5,000 people. I mean, probably a lot more than 5,000 people, right? And not only has he fed more than 5,000 people with this small lunch, but there's enough for 12 baskets of leftovers. I mean, this is an amazing miracle. But Jesus has a test plan for his disciples. Remember, when the boy comes up with the lunch, the disciples are the ones who almost turn him away. The disciples are the ones who meet him and say, Jesus is a guy here, he's a little boy, he's got a lunch. You know, I just wanted you to know so that, you know, we can send him away and say thank you, but then we're going to have the adults talk about this situation. And Jesus says, no, bring him to me. But it's the disciples who are not showing the faith that Jesus wants them to have. And so now Jesus is actually going to test them in a very real way. He's going to see where his disciples' focus is. Is it on him? Is it on Jesus? Or is it on their circumstances? So, if you would read with me Matthew chapter 14, we're just going to read verses 22 to 24 as we begin. Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 22. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him unto the other side, while he sent the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when evening was come, he was there alone. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with the waves, for the wind was contrary. What I want us to see this morning, and if you could boil this message down to one phrase, it would be this: focus on Jesus, not the storm. Focus on Jesus, not the storm. So as we jump into this passage, I hope that you can see how this is a very, very real situation for these disciples and how you and I can learn some very valuable lessons for the storms that we go through in our own lives. So number one, focus on Jesus. He knows the storm. Focus on Jesus. He knows the storm. Now, we've all experienced storms before, right? I mean, all of us have experienced probably bad storms. So we can see the cold front coming in, or the warm front, or whatever it is, and you see the clouds in the distance, and they look menacing, right? And, you know, if you're anywhere else in the country, you get a little bit scared and a little bit nervous, but if you are here in the Midwest, you go out to your porch, and you start to watch, right? That's exactly what happens, right? So you go on the porch, hands on your hips, and say, looks like a storm's coming in, right? That's exactly what happens. And so, basically, we've all had these storms, and it's not really a big deal when you're just kind of watching it come in on the radar until a really violent, dangerous storm actually hits, right? Now, the question is, why are we so nervous or afraid or antsy when a dangerous, violent storm hits? And I would submit to you that it's probably because we don't have any control over it, right? I mean, we cannot control how strong the wind blows or how hard the rain comes down, or we can't control if our house is going to stand or if the tree next to our house is going to fall over or not, right? I mean, there's things that are very uncertain when we have storms that come up in real life, and it unnerves us. And you know what? The storms of life that you and I face every day can often feel the same way, can't they? They're unnerving. And they're unnerving for pretty much the same reason. We can't do anything about it. Now, the interesting thing about looking at storms on your radar is pretty much you can see when they're about to come in, right? I mean, you can see we've got to prepare, right? We've got to board up the windows. If you have hurricanes down south or out on the East Coast, you got hurricanes coming in, you have enough time usually for people to be able to board up the windows, to be able to evacuate towns, to be able to get ready. The difference is that when the storms of life come, you can't prepare, so to speak, because you're watching it come in. You can't see that the storm is about to hit, and so we need to board up the windows, and we need to make sure that we are ready for the storm. But guess what? We need to be ready for the storm, even though we can't see when it's coming. And we can find comfort even in the storm, even because we don't know when the storm is coming. We can find comfort because Jesus knows exactly what we're going through. So, letter A, Jesus has not abandoned you. Jesus has not abandoned you. Now, this is so interesting because if we look at verse 22, and straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship. Now, that word constrained is very interesting because it's referencing a very urgency that Jesus is having. It's got an urgent undertone to it. And the literal meaning of the word is almost forceful. It's like he's compelling them to get into a ship. He sent them away. And this sort of behavior from Jesus is not what the disciples are used to seeing, right? I mean, it must have been very confusing for them for Jesus to be ushering them very quickly to get into the boat. I mean, he's seen many, many times, the disciples have seen him sending away the multitudes, and then they get to stay with Jesus, and they get to hear the inside scoop of what's happened, and they want to make sure that everybody else knows that they know exactly what's going on, and then they quietly ask him on the side, "What in the world did you just say?" Right? But this time they can't do that. This time Jesus constrains them to get into the boat, and they've got to leave, and it probably has crossed the disciples' mind when this is happening. I wonder what's wrong with Jesus, right? Is he okay? I hope Jesus is doing okay right now. But Jesus has sent them away along with the multitudes. Remember, if we look at a different passage in John, and we'll look at that in just a second, the disciples are trying to make Jesus the king because of what he's done. They're trying to make him the king on the spot. And so Jesus is sending both of them away, and Jesus has just fed more than 5,000 people with this small lunch. And so these disciples, I mean, you think about this with me, they've probably been caught up into the emotions of the crowd. You know, let's make Jesus king. Well, yeah, let's make him the king, right? He should be the king. These are his closest followers, his closest supporters. And so they want to be able to elevate him to the spot that they think he needs to be at. But if we look at John chapter 6, this is what the full picture is. John chapter 6, verses 14 and 15. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, "This is of a truth the prophet that should come into the world." Then Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king. And he departed again into a mountain himself alone. This is what the disciples could have been thinking. Is Jesus okay? He's forcing us away. Is Jesus abandoning us? What is he doing? This is not like him. And instead, we see the full picture. Jesus is not abandoning his disciples. He's prioritizing his Father here. I mean, these people are literally trying to seize him and make him the king by force, but that wasn't his mission. Earthly glory is not the reason that Jesus came to earth. And so Jesus stepped out of the spotlight. Jesus sent the crowds away, sent his disciples away, and chose to be alone with his Father in prayer. You know, just like the disciples, sometimes you and I can think that we know what God's plan is, right? We can think that we know what God is trying to do in this situation. I know the spot that needs the most work right now, and God is bringing this storm into my life. And you know what? I understand what Jesus is doing. But then the very moment when something happens in that situation that we don't understand, we often say, what is Jesus doing? Is Jesus okay? We can act like we know God's plan, and then we doubt God when it's not exactly what we expected. We get into this mindset to think about what's wrong with Jesus. I hope he's okay. Don't think that you know a better way to accomplish God's plan in your life than God does. Instead, live with unwavering trust in Jesus, because the disciples missed something very important. Fully knowing Jesus means fully trusting Jesus. The disciples thought that they knew Jesus. But yet so often you and I can think that we know Jesus, and we can get caught in the trap of not trusting Jesus' plan in our life. So Jesus constrains his disciples straightway to get into the boat. Verse 23, look there with me. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up to a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. Now, remember, Jesus knows what's about to happen to his disciples. Okay, Jesus is not going to be taken by surprise that there's a storm that's about to spring up on the Sea of Galilee. He knew that they were about to encounter a huge and unexpected storm, but he doesn't stop them. He doesn't say, hold on, you might need my help in just a little bit, so why don't you wait and don't go to the boats yet, right? He doesn't say that. Instead, he legitimately sends them on their way. He pushes them towards the boats. He constrains them to go out onto the sea. He's sending them into a storm that they had no idea was coming. And so we could think, what in the world is Jesus doing? It seems like Jesus is abandoning his disciples. It seems like Jesus is saying, you go into this storm, and I hope it works, and I hope you learn something good. I'm going to go and pray with my Father. But that's not what Jesus is doing here. Right? Here's a question. What do you think Jesus was praying about when he was on that mountaintop? Now, yes, granted, Jesus had a whole lot to pray about. Okay? He communed with his Father regularly, and he was talking about a whole lot of things, no doubt. But what do you think was top of mind for Jesus when he was on that mountaintop? Jesus is not forgetting or abandoning his disciples here. Jesus is praying for his disciples. He knows that they're about to go into a storm. You think Jesus doesn't know each one of the individual personalities of his disciples very, very well? He knows how they're going to respond. He knows what they're going to try to do, that they're going to try to get themselves out of this storm. He knows exactly what he's doing. In your life today, you might be headed for a trial without even realizing it. And none of us are in control of our lives. No matter how much we care or how much we plan, we cannot prevent hardships from coming into our lives. And that feeling can be incredibly unsettling, but it doesn't have to fill us with fear. Because Jesus already knows exactly what lies ahead. And he cares for you deeply. He cares for you intimately. And right now, at this very moment, Jesus is interceding for you. He's praying for you, for your strength, for your faith. You are not forgotten in your storm. You are not alone. Jesus has never abandoned you, and Jesus never will. Jesus is not abandoning his disciples here. Jesus is praying for them. So we see that Jesus hasn't abandoned you, but number two, Jesus hasn't lost you. Look at verse 24. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea. It was tossed with the waves, for the wind was contrary. So now the narrative so far has been on Jesus, okay? And now the narrative shifts to the disciples. And it's not a pretty scene, okay? A violent storm has suddenly come up over the Sea of Galilee, and it's making their trip extremely difficult. Now, if you know anything about the Sea of Galilee, this is not an uncommon thing, okay? It sits 700 feet below sea level, and it's surrounded by these steep hills so that the cool air and the warm air come together, and you meteorologist people, they collide with each other, and just violent storms spring up almost out of nowhere, okay? And so in an instant, because this sea is relatively small compared to the ocean, these violent storms can really cause a problem with, I mean, the sea waves becoming 6 to 10 feet high. And remember, these disciples are not in a gigantic cruise ship, all right? They're in a fishing boat. And so when you think about the waves and the wind and this small boat that was not meant for all of this, this is a terrifying storm. It's not just a light rain that they're kind of having to go through. You got to pull on the sail and take out the oars and just start rowing, right? That's not how it happened. These disciples are literally in fear for their very lives. And the Bible actually says in verse 24, the ship was now in the midst of the sea. Now, this is interesting because the Sea of Galilee is about 4 to 5 miles wide, which means that at this point, that phrase there is kind of indicating that the disciples have rowed about 3 miles. And so they've gotten to this point as far as they can, but because of the wind and the waves, they're not getting much further than this. They're not making very much progress. And by this point, of course, as the storm is rolling in, the clouds, it's all dark, and the wind is throwing them around, and the waves, they don't even know if they're going in the right direction anymore. I mean, they are truly lost. And so, again, this storm is incredibly frightening. And so you can't use your sail in this kind of a storm, obviously. So these disciples are literally trying to row through this storm. And as they're rowing, you can probably start to get into their heads just for a moment. This is a big problem. We might actually die out here. You see, no one from the disciples was expecting this kind of an end. I mean, no one was expecting this kind of thing to happen. You just go from this amazing, incredible miracle that Jesus has done, and it's a mountaintop experience, and it's a wonderful thing, and God is doing great things, and you expect to get in the boat, and you expect to talk about what God has done. And you expect that you will actually think about things. What has God just done here, and what should our response be? What kind of amazing things is God planning for in the future if this is what he's done? But that's not what's happening here. The disciples are being tested after this spiritual mountaintop experience. Jesus knew exactly what he was doing. My question to you would be this. What is your response when you have a spiritual victory? What is your response when you have spiritual victory? When God does something great in your life? When God does something great in the life of someone else that maybe you've been praying for? Do you sit back and relax? Man, God has just done something amazing. God has done something incredible. We can take a break just for a second, right? We can take a break. At least until we cross the Sea of Galilee, we can take a break. The disciples were not prepared for this storm to come up. Are you prepared for what's next in your Christian life? God is never done teaching us, right? God is just using something a little bit different. He's using something in a little bit different of a way to teach the disciples something new, right? The disciples have learned something amazing by this miracle. But isn't it true that God can often teach us the greatest lessons in time of hardship as opposed to time of great victory? And it's easy for us, it's easy for you and me to sit here when we maybe don't have very many trials in our lives, and we talk about we should trust Jesus through the storm. And everything just kind of becomes that much more real when you're actually going through the storm. Right? I mean, isn't that true? You talk about all the things that you need to do to prepare, and you talk about all the things that you need to do in order to be ready when the storm comes, and then when it hits, it's like, all bets are off. And I'm just in it to survive. And maybe that's your situation this morning. Maybe you're in a storm and you feel like Jesus has lost you. Like Jesus doesn't know where you are. Friend, Jesus does know where you are. And Jesus knows exactly what you're going through. And Jesus cares about your storm. Remember, while the disciples are doing this, the Bible gives us a great picture. Jesus is up there praying, and the disciples are going through this storm at the same time. Jesus has not lost you in the storm. So when we go through the storms of life, we need to focus on Jesus because he knows the storm. But number two, we need to focus on Jesus because you're not enough. Focus on Jesus, you're not enough. Now, what happens when you have something, I mean, wives, you can probably attest to this probably a lot better than the husbands can. What happens when your husband is working on something and maybe he loses a part, or maybe he can't quite figure it out from the directions, right? Well, obviously, he goes and he asks for help right away, right? No, right? That's not what happens. The natural human response a lot of times to a hardship or something that we're trying to do and it's not quite working out is what? Just try harder, right? You just, I'm sure I'm going to find out how to get there, right? I mean, we think about directions all the time, right? You know, wives, your husband is trying to get you to a certain spot, and he hasn't quite let on that he doesn't actually know where he is. And so you're going through this part of town that you have no idea, and we'll figure it out, right? And then 2 hours later, you finally turn on the GPS and say, all right, now maybe we should actually listen to where we should be going. A natural human response when going through trials or problems or hardships is to just figure it out, right? Maybe you think you can handle it. Maybe you think that you have what it takes to outlast the storm. If that's you today, if you think that you can handle it, if you think that you can just outlast the storm, that is a lie from the devil. You're not enough. I'm not enough. And as we continue through this passage, we see this play out. Letter A, you can't see clearly. You can't see clearly. Look at verse 25. And the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, it is a spirit. And they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, be of good cheer, it is I. Be not afraid. Now, at this point, the disciples have been rowing for hours. I mean, this is an incredibly long amount of time for the disciples to be rowing this boat in this storm. And remember, many of these guys are seasoned, conditioned fishermen. I mean, these guys are not wimps, as you would say. They're strong. They know how to handle themselves in a storm like this. They've fought against the waves, and they've fought against the wind all night long, and they're at a breaking point. I mean, this is very clear from what the Bible is saying. The fourth watch is this reference to the Roman military system. So they would divide up the night into these four watches. Basically, they would divide the night from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And so right now, the fourth watch is 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. It's around there somewhere. They've been rowing all night long. And they're desperate. And they're almost to the end of their strength. Almost. It is interesting as you read this, right? Even though they're going through this huge storm, there's nothing recorded in Scripture where they're crying out for Jesus to come save them. There's nothing recorded in Scripture where they're praying for Jesus to help them. They're trying to figure it out. Right? I mean, you can imagine these fishermen. I've been through a storm like this before. I've grown up on the Sea of Galilee. This is not the first violent storm that they've faced on the Sea of Galilee. I've figured the other ones out. I can figure this one out too. I think we can be a lot like the disciples in many of the storms that we face in life. We can easily think, you know what, I've got this. I'll call Jesus if it gets to be too much. But what we're trying to do is to get as far as we possibly can on our own before we call Jesus. The disciples thought that they had faced storms like this before. It seemed like they had faced storms like this before, but this one was different. And it's right here, right in the midst of this hopeless, completely, this situation that is completely hopeless and they can't do anything about it, that Jesus arrives on the scene. Picture with me, all right? So the disciples are exhausted from fighting the wind and the waves all night long, and they're doing everything they can to even just keep the boat afloat. I mean, they're trying not to capsize. And through all this, it's dark, and you see Jesus coming, walking on the water. It's like he's saying to them, without saying a single word, it's like he's saying, don't you understand that I control the wind and the waves? Don't you understand that I'm greater than all of this? And this is where we clearly see the mindset that the disciples are in right now. Instead of saying, oh, we're saved, it's Jesus, right? They say, oh, it's a ghost. They don't recognize him. They don't see who it really is. What does Jesus do? Jesus doesn't say, well, you couldn't recognize me. Clearly you don't want my help. He doesn't just leave them to figure it out by themselves. He simply identifies himself to them. Right? Now, this is very, very powerful. The phrase that Jesus uses is, be of good cheer. Now, that could also mean take heart. Okay, now, this is not a word that is saying, hey, guys, this is not that big of a deal, all right? Don't worry about it. This is what Jesus is saying. The phrase take heart is saying, I understand the plight that you're in. This is a real situation. This is a problem. But he's saying, in the presence of Jesus, all of your fear can be dismissed. It's a real situation. It's a real crisis. But Jesus is more powerful than your crisis. And the phrase that Jesus used to identify himself is, it is I. It can also be translated as his covenant name, I am. And so Jesus is walking on the water towards his struggling disciples that are trying to stay afloat, and he says to them, take heart, I am. And this is what Jesus is saying. He's saying, I'm here, and I am enough to take care of your problem. I am enough to take care of your problems, so you don't need to fear anymore. Now, take a second here and realize the storm has not stopped. Everything is still, the wind is loud and the waves are high. Jesus has not taken them out of their situation. He's meeting them in their situation. And now the disciples are faced with a choice. Jesus has said, take heart, I am. Do they believe him? Friends, Jesus is not always going to take away your storm immediately. Sometimes he's going to meet you inside of your storm, and he's going to ask you to trust him to take you through it. And the question for you and me today is, if Jesus comes to us and says, take heart, I am, do we believe him? Yes, we can mentally assent that Jesus is enough for my problems. But will we trust him? Will we trust him not only mentally, but will we trust him in the way that we respond in our trials? Look at verse 28. The passage continues, and Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And Jesus said, come. And when Peter was come out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. Letter B, you cannot step out without him. You cannot step out without him. So Jesus is identifying himself to the disciples, and Peter, of course, comes up with this very strange request. Now that phrase, if it is you, but it's probably better to interpret that as saying, since it is you. And Peter's saying, since it is you, please enable me to do the same thing that you are doing. Right? Peter's asking Jesus if he too can walk on the water just like Jesus. Now notice that Peter is asking Jesus first. He's not assuming that he's got the power to be able to walk on the water on the Sea of Galilee by his own strength. Right? He's a fisherman. He is well acquainted enough with the water to know that this is an impossible task that he is asking of Jesus. Now, what do you think, while all of this is going on, what do you think all of the other disciples are thinking? Peter's having this conversation with Jesus, and the disciples are probably, that probably now is not the right time, right? Can we get to the other side, and then you can practice walking on the water afterwards, right? This is not the time, Peter, right? Of all the times to bring up this question, right? What in the world is he thinking? But Jesus agrees. Jesus agrees to Peter's request, and he tells him to come to him on the water. He's encouraging what seems like this crazy, reckless action from Peter. And where some of the disciples might have just been a men of words, Peter was a man of action. And so Peter actually begins to do what Jesus told him to do. He's stepping out onto the water. Again, this is not a calm sea. This is boisterous. The winds are loud and the waves are high. Notice the last verse of 29. He walked on the water to go to Jesus. To go to Jesus. That was all the protection that Peter needed. His focus was not on the wind. His focus was not on the waves, but his focus was trained on Jesus alone. You know what? Some of us are in a storm right now. And everything that is inside of us is telling us to stay in the boat, to hold on tight, to ride it out. We're not really in a safe spot. The boat is not safe. But it's the only thing we know. And so we're going to hold on to the boat no matter what. But friends, sometimes Jesus calls us in the storm to leave even the small safety that the boat can provide and to trust him exclusively. Peter gets out of the boat, and now he's completely without any other recourse. Jesus is the only one who is keeping him afloat. Before, the rest of the disciples, they're still trusting in the boat here. At least there's something that we can hold on to. But now, just imagine with me, the wind and the waves are howling, and Peter steps out, and now it's him and Jesus surrounded by the storm. This is real trust, real faith that Peter is demonstrating. You know, the boat, the safe place in your storm, is not always the place where God grows your faith. Sometimes the most secure place that you can be is not in the boat at all, but stepping out into the storm and trusting Jesus one step at a time. And everything would be wonderful and great if we stopped there, right? I mean, this would be a wonderful, amazing story, but we wouldn't be able to relate as much if we didn't have verse 30. Let's read verse 30. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. Letter C, you cannot stand alone. You can't stand alone. So Peter is displaying this amazing trust, this amazing faith in who God is. And he knows that God is the one, Jesus is the one who can keep me from falling. I don't need a boat. I just need focus on Jesus. But then, it's like his brain has begun to catch up with what his feet are doing. and he starts to look around. And he starts to think, what in the world am I thinking? Notice the initial cause of doubt here. He takes his focus off of Jesus, and he's looking at his circumstances, right? He's looking, so to speak, he's looking down instead of looking up at Jesus. He sees, oh, you know what? These waves are a whole lot taller than they were back in the boat. Now that he's out of the protection of the boat, the wind is hitting him a lot harder. He's starting to maybe feel the full force of the storm now. And look at the next phrase. It says, he was afraid. Friend, when you take your eyes off of Jesus and begin to look around at the storm, you will always become afraid. Why? Well, remember, you can't control the storm. You can't do anything to be able to make the storm better than it is. Jesus is the only one who is in control of the storm. Why do we become afraid? Well, because we've just told ourselves that our circumstances are greater than God is. By taking his focus off of Jesus and looking around at the storm, Peter is saying, you know what? I am more afraid of these circumstances. I'm more afraid of the wind and the waves than I am of Jesus himself. I am more in awe of what is going on around me in nature, what my circumstances are telling me, than what Jesus is telling me. And right on cue, he begins to sink. Immediately, as soon as he takes his focus off of Jesus, he begins to sink. Now, Peter sinks right when he takes his focus off of Jesus and starts to think, I can't do this, right? But realize this with me. Peter's missing the point. He was never doing this in the first place. It was Jesus who was allowing him to walk on the water in the first place. It was all about Jesus and his power. Realize this whole thing about Peter walking on the water, some people kind of talk about how great Peter was and what an amazing act of faith. This story is not about Peter. This story is about Jesus and his power. And so Peter falls into the sea, and he's sinking beneath the waves, and he cries out the only thing that makes sense in this situation. Lord, save me. Now, this is real from Peter, right? He's not trying to put on an act. He's not trying to look good for everyone else. This is a legitimate cry from Peter. And this is exactly what Jesus is wanting to hear. Because by doing this, Peter is actually saying, Lord, there's no other recourse that I have. The only thing that can save me now in this situation as I'm sinking is you. And so he's not looking at his surroundings. He's not looking around at the boat. He's calling out only to Jesus. Now, when it comes to your life, the point is not how much faith you have. It's who you place your faith in. We can have a lot of faith in a lot of different things. But if our faith is on the wrong thing, it's not just poorly placed, it's worthless. But Jesus is never going to fail you. And so he deserves your faith. So we need to focus on Jesus because he knows the storm. We need to focus on Jesus because you're not enough. But then finally, number three, focus on Jesus because he's in control. Now, do you remember when you were a kid and your dad would put you up maybe on the ledge of the pool and he would go out into the pool and he would say what? Jump, right? Jump. Now, there's two responses to that, okay? And you parents probably know this. There's two responses to that. Either you have somebody, a child who has zero concern for their life and they just jump, right? Wildly, like a belly flop or something. You have another kid who is a much more cautious potentially, right? And they're waiting, and they're not sure. And what is the dad going to say in this situation? Trust me, I'll catch you. Right? Trust me, I'll catch you. And many times, that is what calms the fears of the child. Why? Because it's not on them to be able to stop their fall. It's on their dad. And they trust their dad. in situations like this, in the storms of our lives, Jesus is going to call us to jump sometimes. And a lot of times we can be scared, nervous. I can't. But yet Jesus is saying, it's not about you. It's about me. I will catch you. Letter A, he saves you when you're sinking. Look at verse 31. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? Now, be careful, because this phrase of little faith actually comes from a word that Matthew uses 5 times in this book. And every single time he uses the word or the phrase of little faith, he's not referring to inadequate faith. Every single time he's referring to unbelief. So Jesus is not saying you didn't have enough faith. If you just would have had a little bit more faith, you could have walked on the water. Jesus is saying you stopped believing. You stopped having faith, period. Friend, in your storm today, Jesus is not requiring you to reach a certain amount of faith before he helps you. In fact, he said that even if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, that you can do impossible things. It's not the size of your faith that matters. It's the size of your God. And the question is, how big is God in your life today? And Jesus asks that to Peter. He pulls him up out of the water, and he says, why did you doubt? Now, what would you say in that situation if you're Peter? Lord, didn't you see my situation? Didn't you see how tall the waves were? How loud the wind was? Didn't you see how uncertain my future looks? How heavy this burden has become? Jesus would say, yes, I see it all, but I am still greater. Friends, your problem is not that your storm is too big. Your problem is that your view of God is too small. No matter the storm that you're going through or facing, God is enough for your storm. And then lastly, he is worthy of your worship. Look at verse 32. And when they were come into the ship, the wind ceased, and when they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, of a truth, thou art the Son of God. Now this is pure and utter worship from the disciples. They saw what happened, and they see that Jesus has just calmed the storm immediately. And now they recognize Jesus for who he really is. The one who's got control over the wind. The one who's got control over the waves. And they realize that only Jesus could save them. This storm that you're going through in your life, it's not meant to destroy you. Your storm is meant to draw you closer to Jesus. And sometimes the very thing that we are wishing that Jesus would just take away from us, that he would just relieve us from, is the very thing that he is using to bring you closer to him. He's inviting you. He's inviting you to trust him more deeply than ever before. So, friend, do you feel like you're in a storm this morning? Maybe you feel like you're still in the boat. You're holding on, hoping that the winds will die down. Maybe you have stepped out in faith, and now you're looking around at the storm, and the waves are looking higher, and the winds are feeling stronger than you expected. Wherever you are in your life today, focus on Jesus. He knows the storm. You're not enough, but he is still in control. And the purpose of your storm is not just to survive it, right? The purpose of your storm is to see Jesus clearly in it. He's using that storm to draw you closer to himself, to strengthen your faith. And he's using it to remind you that he is all that you need. Let's pray this morning. Father, as we take the next few minutes and we focus on what you've spoken to us about in your word, may we have hearts that are open to learn from you, hearts that are ready to hear your voice. May you help us to make the changes that we need to in our lives this morning. As your heads are bowed and your eyes are closed very quickly this morning, is that you? Do you feel like you're in a storm today? Do you feel like maybe you can't remember the last time you weren't in a storm? Friend, Jesus cares about your storm. Jesus cares about you. And he's not just putting you through a storm and hoping that you'll come out on the other side better for it. Jesus will meet you in your storm. Jesus will grow you through your storm. Don't allow your storm to pull you further away from Jesus. Allow it to push you closer to him.